The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.
Hello and welcome. We are so glad to have you here today on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. It's another awesome day in Brookings Harbor, Oregon, as we call it the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest. This is about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. It's the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and truly the nicest people you're ever going to meet. This is where the mountains and the old-growth redwoods meet the sea. Harbor in Brookings is home to me. I'm your host, Misty Young. Here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, I'm joined today by my co-host, Sherry Carey Baum. Hello, Sherry.
Good morning.
Morning. Welcome. So glad to have you here. As usual, we're going to talk about nutrition today. We've got a special report, a special topic we're going to talk about. But before we get started, let's say a good round of applause and thank you to the KCIW sound engineering and production crew, all of whom we appreciate. And not just those folks, but the volunteers, the folks on the board of directors, the folks like you that actually contribute a little tiny bit of money to make this little station that could, that did, that is the station it is that brings Community Coast Radio to the folks of Curry County, Oregon, and the surrounding region. So welcome. We're glad to have you here today. Now, we are going to talk about health, of course. You know I'm not a doctor. You know I'm not a scientist. I'm a nutrition nerd. I'm a little bit of a geek. I do hold a certificate, a nutritional therapist certificate from the Health Sciences Academy, and also a plant-based nutrition certificate from the E. Cornell T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. My co-host, however, is a medical professional,
I am.
A registered nurse, a nurse practitioner, a nurse midwife.
Yep.
And also the holder of a plant-based nutrition certificate from the E. Cornell T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. Having said that,
it was a mouthful, wasn't it?
It was. There was a ton.
You did it gracefully.
I so appreciate that. Sherry, I'm so glad you're here. You know, over the course of the last few months as we've been talking, I've learned such a tremendous amount from you. I wake up at night and I think about what you tell me and what you teach me,
oh,
and your kindness
fun.
And patience. It is fun. And then I think, how cool is it that we're being able to essentially take our personal private conversations on the road and talk to other people about it.
Absolutely.
And to share this knowledge. Now, today we want to talk about obesity.
Yeah, it's not everybody's favorite topic, but I think we have to kind of wake up and realize it. The reason I talked to you about maybe talking about obesity is because I kept reading all these articles from England and New Zealand that said, well, we're not as fat as Americans, but we're getting close.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hey?
Right, what the what?
Wait a minute.
Right, or as I like to say, what the fork?
Exactly. You know, it was kind of, I don't know. So then I wanted to check my facts.
Yes.
Okay, so we are overweight. There's absolutely no question about it.
Yes.
But we are not the fattest in the universe. Okay, so there are some South Pacific countries, Samoan,
American Samoa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That has a much higher rate of obesity, but we're pretty bad. And I think maybe they're comparing us to the more industrialized nations when they say we're the fattest in the world. But
yeah,
I don't know. I was getting defensive. I'm an American. I get defensive. Don't you go saying mean things about my culture and my country. But they're true. Unfortunately, yeah. When you look at the statistics, 36 to 38% of us are considered obese.
Oh, my gosh.
Obese, not overweight.
Obese.
And if you want to include the obese and the overweight in America, and this is through CDC. This isn't just through some bizarre little company that's doing the research.
CDC, you're talking about the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Right, because obesity is the bottom line of so many diseases. It's a lifestyle, and it's causing all these lifestyle diseases, which we can talk about what those are. But overweight and obese, we're now at 71.6% of the population is either overweight or obese.
You know, I'm looking at I've brought to the table today a lot of resources just because.
A lot of lovely books.
I do. I have a lot of lovely books. And one that I'm looking at right now is The China Study, written by
that.
T. Colin Campbell and Thomas N. Campbell. And in here, there is a chart. If you're looking at the book, it's on page 126. Of course, you can get this book at your library, local library. You can pick it up wherever you want to. But the library, you can get it absolutely for free. That's one of the things I love about being in America is that you have access. We have access to so much information. And in this body mass index table, for a person who is 70 inches tall now, is that 5'10"?
Yes.
5'10". Okay, yes. So that would be me. 70 inches tall, the category for overweight, which this makes me really happy, actually, because I thought I was on the obese edge, but I'm not. The category for overweight is between 202 and 174 pounds. Now, I'm closer, actually, to the bottom end of that now than I have been. I know. It makes me so happy because I've been at the top end before. It doesn't feel good.
No, I've been at the top end too. And it just, everything is a struggle. I just remember everything was a struggle, putting my clothes on and feeling how tight they were.
Yes.
But I still blame the dryer.
You blame the dryer.
My fault. The jeans were tight because I had dried them. I should have hung them on the line is what I always used to tell myself.
Yeah.
And that's why they're so uncomfortable. But, you know, it's just a hard life when you're struggling with being overweight and being able to move.
And it's hard because we know that, you know, we don't want it to be our own fault. And in some ways, it's not our fault.
It's not.
We're in a culture that pushes food, 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 food. You cannot turn around without being confronted by, assaulted by advertising and food everywhere.
Well, and it's not just food that we're being insulted by. I mean, I haven't seen one commercial for broccoli,
right,
zucchini,
for spinach,
lettuce.
Yeah.
It's that we're being constantly bombarded with big corporations that are putting processed food in our face. And we know that when we really became a processed food nation, which was what, in the 50s, 60s, where it really escalated, that's when our weight started escalating. I mean, they can track it back to the 70s when our weight just ballooned and it's not stopping.
Well, it's hard because you become addicted to these foods.
Well, they make them that way. They have scientists that spend hours and hours and millions of dollars on how to get you to go back to that sweet roll or the potato chips. You know, there is a reason you can't just eat one.
Right, the bliss point.
Oh,
right? They've got the texture, the mouthfeel, the salt, the everything,
and
all of it.
The grossest part is I read a book that talked about the science of food. And they talked about how, as Americans, we don't want texture. We want it to go in our mouth like a potato chip. Take a potato chip, put it on your tongue. It dissolves.
Wow.
You know, it literally kind
dissolves.
Of dissolves.
Yes.
You can suck it and get it all soft and smooshy.
Oh, it's so
like
gross. And when you do
food.
That, it's gross.
It is so gross.
Yeah.
And they spent huge amounts of money on those cinnamon buns.
Oh,
Cinnabon.
Cinnabon.
So that you can smell them when you walk in. You go... And that triggers that sense, and then the sweet, the melting in your mouth,
right.
All of those things is to bring you back and to get you to eat more and more and spend more money, because they're not handing them out for free, right?
Right.
They're not
right.
Saying,
in fact,
here.
They're investing massive corporate dollars
absolutely
to make sure that we come back. I think the Frito-Lay company has a number of people that they call craveability experts.
Yeah.
And those craveability experts are literally there to assure that you can't eat just one. And I always thought about that was like, oh, isn't that cute? Isn't that a cute slogan? It's not a promise. It's a threat.
It is. And they hit every sense you have. So your visual, right? You've got that smoky or, you know, whatever.
Right, whatever it is.
Is
barbecue
attractive.
Flavor, ranch, cool ranch.
Frosting that's ooey and gooey on those buns and the cinnamon. And then
the
you've
sweet,
got the smell.
Salty. Yeah.
They do have salty. You don't actually taste it, but it's there. It's hitting every one of your senses and it's sticky. So even your hands get happy, right? I mean, you got to lick your fingers, right? Unless you're a germophobia. My daughter would not be licking her fingers. She'd be like, oh, that's disgusting. Mom.
Right. Mom, I had a Cinnabon. Do you have any hand sanitizer?
That's my daughter.
I love your daughter. She's amazing. But the fact is, these foods are so addictive and they are everywhere. They're just saturating our environment, and they are saturated with saturated fats. I mean, that's the whole purpose of our messages about whole food, plant-based living, or as we like to call it, you know, the standard American diet is sad. And a glowing lifestyle American diet is conversely glad.
Absolutely.
Right? So we were
vibrant,
able to,
beautiful.
Yes, it's healthful and nutritious, and your cells are happy and your mind is happy. People that are victims of the standard American diet are literally sad. They literally suffer with depression.
They're depressed. They're not active. You know, they don't always leave the house. They're not enjoying life as much. I mean, there's a link between it, diet, obesity, overweightness, and depression and anxiety.
And it isn't just because we have this sense of we don't look good, we don't feel good.
Oh, no, it has nothing to do with that.
It's not that. Yeah. It really truly is that the brain function, the energetic function of the human being is depressed, leading to an emotional response that also follows that depression. In fact, I was looking at a study. I'm about to take a class in applied nutrition. And in the modules that I'm studying for, there's a statement here that says, being overweight is not just a matter of finding clothes or fitting in airline seats. According to the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, obesity increases risk for just about every prevalent chronic disease in the U.S. Every one of them. And then they go down and they list this, and just coming right off the topic of depression, it says, just to repeat that, because I think this is so important. According to the CDC, obesity increases the risk for just about every prevalent chronic disease in the U.S. And they list these off. All causes of death, mortality, arthritis, body pain with physical dysfunction, cancer, coronary heart disease, depression, and mental illness, gallstones and gallbladder disease, high blood pressure. The list keeps going.
Oh, it goes on and on.
It goes on and on. I'm not even going to finish the list. Diabetes obviously is on there. Stroke is on there. So we have to look at this concept of the standard American diet. It's killing us.
It is.
Literally.
It is. Not only is it killing us as a nation, but it's also financially breaking us.
It's,
I mean, we're talking
us.
$147 billion for healthcare costs on obesity. But then if obesity is our food is the number one factor. Obesity is basically a symptom of what we're eating. I mean, honestly, right? I mean, we can't
the
just
food,
say.
It's the food.
Right, we're not popping out obese. It's definitely the food that's causing the obesity. But then obesity is the number one factor for all of our lifestyle diseases. As you said, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, depression, even some arthritises, a lot of arthritises because of the inflammation, right?
And I'm curious, having been a maternity, a midwife, literally, and being involved in maternity and in reproductive health, reproductive and infertility problems are on the list of things caused by obesity.
Absolutely.
PCOS, right?
Right. Polycystic ovarian disease. That was a huge complication for young women. First of all, once their BMI gets high enough, they stop ovulating.
Wow.
So they stop actually even having a cycle.
Wow.
So it's incredible when you watch what happens when they start ovulating again.
Uh-huh.
You know, when they lose, it doesn't even take that much weight to reconnect the hormones and get everything going again. Sometimes just losing 20 pounds, they'll ovulate and have a baby.
Do you know what the average height of an average woman is? Do you know? Is it like 5'6"?
Well, I'd like to say I'm perfect. 5'7"?
No. 5'7". So is 5'7", is that 67 inches?
Yeah.
That's 5'7".
Yeah. So I don't know that that's really what it is. I'm teasing.
Well, I think the average height woman is 5'6".
Okay.
I think that's average. So the average height woman, in order to not be in the overweight category, needs to be at 148 pounds.
That's the top.
That's at the top.
That's the top.
The list.
That's a BMI of what? 24 point whatever.
Yeah. Look at you know the numbers off the top of your head. Like, I got to get out the book and look it up. You're
no,
so
no.
Good.
I'm a numbers person. I'm not a names person. Like, I don't know how many times I look at you and I go, yeah, well, it's just rich, you know, the athlete.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, I got that one.
Right.
But numbers stick in my brain. Well, if you look at the obesity rate again, adolescents, 12 to 19.
Yes.
20% of our adolescents are obese.
Oh my
now,
gosh.
20% doesn't sound like a lot until you line up five children. One of those five is going to be obese.
Yeah.
Think about that. Wow. One out of five. And right. Us growing up, I mean, maybe we didn't have as much processed food. We didn't have as much access to food. We certainly didn't have as much access to TV and whatnot. I mean, that was only when you did your homework and your chores and you played outside all night, right?
Yeah.
So really, truly, we didn't have all of the things that are obstacles now for activity and for food. But looking at 6 to 11-year-olds, 18.4%.
Oh, my goodness.
And then 2 to 5-year-olds. And I thought that was where you were going with labor and delivery and obesity. But 2 to 5-year-olds, we're looking at 13, almost 14% of these 2-year-olds
14%.
Being obese. We're not talking overweight. We're talking obese. So, you know, it's definitely impacting our society, infertility. Right? I mean, that's a pretty scary thing for a woman. It's overwhelming. It's scary.
Yes.
Frustrating.
Yes.
Sometimes we don't even know what it is. And I saw there's a new book by Dr. Bernard that talks about hormones. And he's really saying that women that are having infertility problems, the amount of money that they're spending on the procedures, I mean, that can be anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000, depending on how much you're spending on infertility procedures. And he's saying, some of these women, he puts them on a whole food plant-based diet, and within 6 months, they're pregnant.
Isn't that incredible?
Just excluding the high fat, the high saturated fat, the high animal protein, the hormones in the protein. So it's not just one thing, but turning to a whole food plant-based diet, they're having success. So maybe as midwives, nurse practitioners, and OBs, maybe we should say, you're struggling with infertility, let's put you on a whole food plant-based diet for 3 months, see how you feel, see what your cycles are doing, and go from there.
You know, how brilliant is that? I love that you brought up Dr. Bernard, and I just, this week, I mean, I want to say we're normal friends, right? Like, we get together like normal friends, and we're like, hey, how's it going? How's your life? And this and that, but we don't ever talk about normal stuff. We talk about whole food plant-based living.
Now we do for about 5 minutes, and then one of us brings up the subject, and then we run with it.
Right,
so
and then we run with it.
We start out like normal friends.
Like normal people, right. But, you know, this week earlier, we were talking about Dr. Bernard, and we were talking about hormones, and I told you that I have two pieces of this thing I want to say. I was mentioning to you that I had seen this interview with Rich Roll on the Rich Roll podcast, which is phenomenal.
Love Rich Roll, yeah.
Yeah, and Dr. Bernard. And I'm going to come back to what I talked about or what Dr. Bernard mentioned because I thought it was so amazing. But the thing that you said after I told the story was you said, well, yeah, it's about hormones. And you said, it's not just the hormones they're injecting into the meat that people are eating. But those animals have hormones of their own, natural animal hormones on board.
Right. Because, especially milking cows.
Yeah. Talk about that. And then I'm going to tell this story about what Dr. Barnard said and what he did. But talk about the hormones that are in cows.
Well, they're completely manipulated. First of all, most animals aren't going to be pregnant every 9 to 10 months.
Right.
Right.
Like this constant cycle of pregnancy.
We're constantly either getting, these poor cows never get a break. So they're either breastfeeding or they're pregnant.
Yes.
And a lot of times while they're pregnant, they're still lactating.
Yes.
Because we want the hormones on there. You don't just suddenly lactate. You have to create hormones for it.
Right.
And so these cows are either injected with hormones so that they get pregnant and then so that they can continue to lactate. Because remember, when I say they're lactating, they're breastfeeding, whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
They don't have the calves there.
Right.
We're forcing them to continue lactation, even though they don't have a baby cow.
Right.
Whereas with people, women, you know, if you stop breastfeeding, you stop producing milk.
Right. You stop that lactation factor. And
right.
The hormonal impact on your body completely changes, right?
Right.
The physical act of nursing a baby releases hormones that continue to release to create milk for lactation so you can continue to nurse a baby. Same is true with cows,
right? Also, you got to remember that when you're having those high lactating hormones, you eat a lot more too.
Wow.
Right? Think about it when you're supplying food for another being. So I wonder how much of the human growth factor that's in the dairy milk is getting into us. And human growth factor makes us bigger, right?
Right.
Plus up that baby cow to 400 pounds.
Right.
Maybe more.
No, I think you're right. It's the baby cow start around 60 pounds. And the goal is for this bovine
first
growth
year.
Fluid, which, yep. You know, let's just be real about it. It's bovine growth
right.
fluid. It is cow growth fluid. It is cow milk designed for baby cows to go from
yep.
60 pounds to 400 pounds in a very short period yep. of time. So when we ingest that, not only are we ingesting the cow growth fluid,
right.
we're ingesting the cow hormones that are designed to
force
keep
lactation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
In addition to the hormones that are being injected into the cow that might be synthetic,
right.
might be modified. It just, to me, it's just
goes on and on.
It's crazy.
And I always go back. I don't know who said this, whether it was Dr. Campbell or Dr. Bernard, but they always go back to, we are the only species that drinks another's breast milk.
Right. It's creepy.
We're the only species that
yeah.
does that. There's no other animal that.
Yes. That does that.
No.
Yeah. It's
no.
pretty weird. Maybe in extreme circumstances. So I did see something during all those Australian bushfires where a fox was nursing some other animal.
But it's a baby it's nursing.
Right. It's a baby. It wasn't like an adult came over and hooked up. You know, like, hey, I need to hook up.
Say, I'm a little hungry, a little
right.
thirsty.
Right. It's
yeah,
a little
nope.
strange. No.
Yeah. It. We have to start thinking about it in a different way because I do think that if we go back to industry, we've been brainwashed.
Yeah.
We really have. We've been told for generation after generation that everything we've been doing is good for us. And the research is out. The research is out now that the best lifestyle, the best diet is a whole food, plant-based diet for longevity, for health, for mental wellness. This is it. And the proof is out there. You can look at any one of the books. And there are a lot of people that are trying to deny it. But the research is showing that a whole food plant-based diet is the diet of our species.
I love it. And I love that you're talking about the evidence is there.
It's
you know,
there.
The proof is in the pudding. All of this is evidence-based medicine.
Absolutely.
You know, lifestyle medicine, yep. evidence-based, scientific, you know, medically studied journal articles, books, lectures,
yep.
materials, you know, scientific research proves without a
right.
shadow of a doubt that animal proteins, animal saturated fats, and all of the hormones, the junk that comes from eating other beings
absolutely.
Doesn't fit in our bodies. Here's a good example of it. So Dr. Barnard, that's Neil Barnard. He is
right.
the president or the founder of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Now, I don't know who the marketing genius was that came along behind that name, but that is a great name. It's Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. You can find them at pcrm.org. And Dr. Barnard was talking with Rich about a lady who had come into his clinic, and she was just about to go under the knife for endometriosis.
Oh, I read that.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
that's in his hormone book also.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, because I can't tell you that I know what endometriosis is. I know a little bit, but you know better what it is. Will you kind of share what it is, and then I'll tell the rest of this story, because it's phenomenal.
So actually, endometriosis can be debilitating to some women.
Mm-hmm.
So every single month, they have such severe pain that it really impacts them for school, for work. They just can't go.
They There's can't even function, right?
They
it's
really
like just
can't.
Excruciating pain.
It's excruciating, cramping pain that usually puts them in bed. I mean, they can take Motrin and things, but it really doesn't touch it the way it should. And it's cyclical, which is disappointing for most people, you know, to know every time you're getting your cycle, you're going to be in pain. But what it is the endometrial cells are the actual cells inside your uterus. And they bleed every month, right?
That's part of what
the
they do, right? They thicken
the,
up. They get ready
mm-hmm,
to receive an
fluffy,
egg. They get all fluffy
yeah,
and make
and
a little bed for the new baby.
Secrete that when there's no new baby.
Right.
Unfortunately, for some women, that actually those cells can migrate through the fallopian tubes out into the abdominal cavity or the peritoneal cavity. And those cells do exactly what they're supposed to do, whether they're inside your uterus or whether they're inside your peritoneal cavity. They're going to secrete minuscule amounts of blood
yep.
into that cavity.
Yes.
Well, you know, I Everybody seems to think that blood just floats around in our body, but it doesn't.
It's kind of in the special rivers.
It's in this very special river called veins and arteries.
Veins and arteries, okay.
And that's where it stays. So in your peritoneal cavity, you don't have blood that just floats around.
Right.
Well, when these cells secrete that blood, it is so irritating to the tissue that that's where they're getting the pain. They're cramping. Do we know why people get it? We really don't.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, we do not know. Maybe it might happen with C-sections where they have a cesarean section to deliver a baby because it can't be delivered vaginally. We don't know this. Some of these young women that have endometriosis, it happens all the time. It's before babies. They've never had a child. So
right.
You can't blame it on that.
Can't say that.
So we honestly don't know what the cause of it is.
Do we know if endometriosis has been on the rise? I'm curious if we know that. I'm going to look that up while we're thinking about that.
You know, I don't know that. I saw quite a few cases when I was working in the office of it. And it really did cause complications for people's lives. Because think about it. Every month, you'd have to take a day or two off of work.
Right.
What boss is going to be tolerant of that?
So yeah, not too many. Yeah. It says that the researchers, I'm looking at an article on contemporary OBGYN. .net, and it says the researchers conducted an online cross-sectional survey among women ages 18 to 49 years old. The survey data were weighted by age, education, geographic distribution, other things. They found that 2,922 women of the 48,000 surveyed had endometriosis. Let's see, an age of diagnosis. The majority of women stated they had experienced symptoms prior to their diagnosis. I'm looking through to see if I don't see that it says it's on the rise. I was just kind of curious because is it changing? And I don't see that
but
in
what
this
would
article.
Be curious is, I wish I had all the money in the world and all the brains in the world because I'd love to do a study that correlates obesity with endometriosis because we can correlate polyovarian cystic disease where we're not cycling. So if a woman has severe polyovarian cystic disease, she's not actually even having a cycle. Because her hormones are kind of messed up and they're not causing the bleeding monthly. So it would be interesting to correlate, is endometriosis less in obese women because they're not secreting? Or is it less in women with
polycystic ovarian, PCOS, yeah.
So it would be a fun study to correlate those to see where it's at. But talk about Dr. Bernard, because I read that and it's pretty exciting.
It is exciting. I have to share something that I think is kind of funny with you. You don't know this about me, but I have this list that I've been keeping for years of interesting and fun studies I'd like to see done. Cross-sectional studies, longitudinal studies.
Oh, I love it. Now, have you actually written these down?
Yes,
oh,
they're actually written down. I am such a nerd. Like, I have these crazy ideas about studies, things that ought to be looked at. And you know, they ought to be.
They should,
curious. Science is really a great way for us to figure out what's going on. And in the case of the patient that Dr. Barnard had, what I love is that this woman came to him and she said, Dr. B, I'm about to go under the knife to have my uterus taken out. And he said, I looked at her and I said, what are you talking about? You're a young woman. She was like in her late 20s.
Oh,
yeah.
Heartbreaking.
And she said, I don't have any children, but the endometriosis is just literally nearly, it's debilitating. It's just killing me. The pain is horrid. I can't deal with it anymore. And he said, look, if you're really at your wit's end, you're at the last step, you're going to go and make a very permanent decision. He goes, what harm would there be to take 90 days and try
3 months,
try 90 days, try 3 months, try a nutritional approach. So he put her on a whole food plant-based diet. That lifestyle, of course, you know, when we talk about a whole food plant-based lifestyle, we're not talking about vegan, which is no animal products, but it's high junk food, right? We're not talking about plant-based, which again is highly processed.
Tricky.
We're talking about whole food plant-based. And right. Sherry, Nurse Sherry, thank you. Thank you for being so kind and thoughtful about really identifying what whole food means. It means red bell peppers.
Yep.
Whole red bell peppers.
Now you can chop them up and add them to spaghetti squash or tomato. You know,
yes.
You can chop them up. That's not processing. It's when they manipulate the food to where there is no way it looks like the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a
former, it becomes a former rendition of itself. So this lady goes on the whole food plant-based diet. She comes into his office, absolutely glowing, absolutely radiating for her follow-up appointment, and says, I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
Right? I know, it's exciting. I mean, yeah. This lady had been trying for years to have a baby, and she could not, it just could, wouldn't work. And here she was getting ready to have her uterus removed. She has gone on since then to have a grand total of 3 children.
Yay.
And live a very highly satisfying, whole food, plant-based, glowing nice. Lifestyle American diet.
Yeah.
You know,
now, scientifically, I honestly don't know how a whole food plant-based diet can work on endometriosis. Honestly, I don't know. But I do know that if you give your body the nutrients, the macronutrients,
yes.
the micronutrients, the things that it needs, it heals itself. We know that. So it can see a complication in your body. I mean, Dr. Esselton did studies of blood vessels that were almost completely clogged, that were going to the heart, completely clogged
right.
with plaque and cholesterol and all
right.
of that. Whole food plant-based diet, he redoes the evaluation or the MRI, and now the
it's
vessel's
gone.
Flowing.
Yes, opened up. And not just the main vessel, but the ancillary vessels, the secondaries, right?
Yeah,
all
very
of them
much.
Come back to life.
And it's not magic. It's just your body is doing what it was meant to do. Our bodies are meant to stay healthy, to stay well, and to take care of us. But when you're constantly bombarding it with crud, crap food,
yes,
unhealthy food,
yes,
preservatives, non-food items. I mean, there's a lot of non-food items in processed food.
Yes.
You wouldn't even believe how much is in there. And your body has to survive, so it has to fix what you keep dumping in it. It doesn't have the ability or the strength to heal.
You know, in some ways, it's almost like your body is drowning.
Yeah.
Just drowning. And if you, every night when you go to sleep, you might have maybe 8 or 10 or 12 hours where there's no more water being thrown onto
right.
the drowning victim. But then you get right up in the morning, you have a Cinnabon, you have a Starbucks coffee, you have
eggs, bacon,
toast yeah.
with butter.
Right.
Oh, let's throw in some orange juice,
right?
Which is, I mean, hello, everybody. Orange juice is sugar water.
Right, exactly. Apple juice is sugar water.
Right.
And what's
sugar
the first
water.
Thing we start feeding to children when they're babies?
You hopefully
know,
not.
When the body is suffering like that, we don't even give it a chance Mm-mm. to begin to heal. And
right.
so when I like to say, and I've been doing a lot of writing lately, and a sentence that I recently read and wrote was that every bite is a new start. Every
yep.
bite is a new start. You know, we might say, you know, every bite, every meal, every week, every, it's literally every single bite that we put
yes.
into our mouth.
And we're not here to condemn people that have been eating the way that we've been taught and our culture's
been
taught.
We've been taught.
And our nation has been telling
we've
us
been
to
taught.
Eat. If you look at those my plates, everything
yep.
else, there was all, the majority of it was meat and milk and
yes.
processed rice,
yes.
you know, white rice, all
yep.
those other things. So we're not blaming, but we're hoping that the point gets across what you just said. Every day is a new day.
Yes.
Every chance you eat is a choice to say, I'm going to heal my body or I'm not. I mean, I'm not even going to go be a Debbie Downer and say, I'm going to hurt my body. I'm just going to say, every bite you have is a choice. Am I going to heal it or am I not?
Right.
And when you look at food in that way, instead of totally pleasure, I deserve this. How many times do you deserve a hamburger and french fries in a week?
Right.
I mean, when I say I deserve this,
right.
I usually am saving for something a little more expensive and something bigger, not every lunchtime, I deserve this.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Right.
I deserve this. I deserve a milkshake with my hamburger. I
right.
worked hard today or
yep.
I walked around the block today. How many times do you deserve it?
That is such an interesting thing to bring up. And if you're joining us today, welcome. Thank you for being here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. We're talking with registered nurse Sherry Carey Baum. She's our, not just our guest, she's not our guest. She's our co-host on this show and really
Thank
brings
you.
Amazing relevance and evidence and practice, literal medical practice to the experiences that we're talking about, whether it's metabolic syndrome or obesity or arthritis or giving birth to babies. I mean, she has really seen a tremendous amount during her decades-long experience as a medical provider, and I thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
You know, talking about the I deserve it thing. My daughter, Shyla, went, she ran a half marathon on Sunday.
Now, she does deserve it.
Well, yeah. Well, then this is the crazy
thing. Holy moly.
So, of course, I haven't spoken with her because I'm a modern mother. I don't call my kids when they're on vacation. I check out their Instagram feed and find out what they're doing, right?
Right. Smart.
So I'm looking at her Instagram story yesterday. Yesterday was Monday. And so the half marathon was on Sunday. And there was a picture there of two donut halves. Right. One half was sprinkles, the other half was sugar. And the story caption said, I've been thinking about this post half marathon donut for a long time. This is my reward. And just as you just said, she doesn't reward herself. She doesn't deserve it every day. She doesn't deserve it once a week. She waited till she ran a half marathon.
Right.
I mean, how many? I don't have that kind of willpower.
I think you do.
I don't know. But it is kind of neat. The question you just asked is so relevant. How many times can we say, I deserve this? If we deserve a hamburger and fries every day, then we also deserve the obesity that's going to come with it. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, I'd like to ask you, I think metabolic syndrome is kind of the beginning of obesity. Is metabolic syndrome the beginning of obesity, or is it part of obesity, or is it?
You know, I think it's kind of right in the middle.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like we start to gain weight, then we start gaining weight around our organs.
Right.
And so I don't think it's the beginning of obesity. I just think it's hand in hand.
It's part of the whole thing. Yeah.
It's just hand in hand.
I mean, according to some of the information that I have, metabolic syndrome combines at least three of these issues. So abdominal obesity, high blood sugar, high triglyceride levels, and then high blood pressure or low HDL, which is good cholesterol. But all of those tend to come from
obesity
and tend to come from the standard American diet.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, the funny thing is, we always blame people that are overweight, you know, because you do meet those lovely skinny people that you go, oh, they're so healthy. And then if you did an MRI, they have all that fat that's around their organs, because that's part of what the metabolic syndrome is mm-hmm. we've got so much fat around our organs. Mm-hmm. They still have it. They're getting it from the standard American diet. You're mm-hmm. just not seeing it. It's on the inside. It's not on the outside. And when you talk about people, like every once in a while, you'll read an article that says, well, these people are considered obese, but they're really healthy. Their blood pressure's good. They don't have fat around their organs because they have a tendency to deposit the fat in the love handles, you know, in the adipose tissue outside of the organs. And they have a little bit less of health impact, right? Mm-hmm. Than if somebody that has all the fat around their organs. But I have to say that if you're on that trend and you go, well, I'm a healthy fat, I'm good. What's going to happen in 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen in a year mm-hmm. if you don't make the decision that you're going to shift that? So yeah, you might be what they call the healthy fat today.
Yes.
But what's going to happen tomorrow, 6 months, a year? Are you going to be one of those statistics that die from a sudden heart attack?
Right.
Or suddenly have cancer? When we talk about whole foods, we're not targeting any one person. We want everybody to eat this way because we know that it's the best thing for your health and your life.
It's funny when you think about, you know, one of the myths, and I know we've talked about myths before, but one of the myths in the whole food plant-based approach to living is, well, you know, there's not enough protein. Where am I going to get my protein? You know, I have to get my protein. And I think this is just fascinating to think about. You know, some of the strongest and most muscular animals on the planet are plant-based, right? So gorillas, elephants, horses, cows, even rhinoceroses only
eat
plants.
They're plant-based. Yeah.
Right. And so it's kind of amazing. And I think all of those animals that I just mentioned are mammals. Is that right?
Yeah, they are.
They're all mammals.
They are all mammals.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then what does mammal actually mean? Like, I didn't know what mammal actually meant until, I don't know, a couple years ago. Somehow or another, I was like, well, what is a mammal? A mammal is someone who gives birth to live young and nurses them, right? Breastfeeds live young.
Yep.
But no, we want to have that milk instead. Or no, we want to eat those animals instead. They're not appropriate for human consumption. You know, I love that you brought up the healthcare issue, Because
and the cost.
Yeah, the cost. It's just crazy. According to the study that, you know, we're talking about this class that I'm going to be taking shortly from the Oregon State University. It's an applied mm-hmm. nutrition class. And according to data that I'm studying for this class, and this is in the module on obesity, in the healthcare costs, we're number one. The right. U.S. ranks worst. So this is what the data says. According to the 2007 data, the U.S. has the highest rates of overweight and obesity in the world, followed by other westernized nations, New Zealand, Australia, United Kingdom, and Canada.
But we got to throw,
There's some of the,
There's some countries that are worse.
Some countries that are worse.
They're not industrialized.
Right. I was thinking about that. But the U.S. also has, this is interesting, the most expensive healthcare system in the world, at least double what other countries are spending. And even though Americans are spending nearly $10,000 per person for state-of-the-art healthcare, the 2014 Commonwealth Fund report ranks the U.S. dead last in health outcomes.
Yeah, maternal infant. I mean, that drove me crazy as a midwife. Maternal infant, we're shameful. I mean, I think for infant
mortality,
infant morbidity, mortality, we're like 39.
Well, yeah. In fact, this says the U.S. ranked worst in infant mortality and did the worst job of preventing and treating chronic conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, strokes, and cancer. It goes on to finish, this piece says, obesity is expensive.
Fair.
2015 data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show obesity is costing our healthcare system $147 to $210 billion per year. And what's worse, all this spending is not helping Americans get any healthier. And what I would say is Americans have to help themselves.
And we're good at that.
Yes.
We're known for that. You know, we're the kind of country, population in our country that was always pull up those boots
right.
and tie
rugged
those
individualist.
Strings and fix the problem. Well, the problem, guess what? It's obesity.
Yes.
And we have to pull up our boots and tie our strings, our little shoestrings, and get to work because that's what it's about. We can't keep relying on a country. And we say a lot of the country really wants socialized medicine or universal health care. How are we going to afford it without breaking our country if we don't start taking ownership for what we're doing? I do think people should have health care. I think I do. We're a wonderful nation. We're strong. We are smart. We're all those wonderful things as a country. And I want our country to have
good
access
healthcare,
to health care.
Of course.
Oh, I mean, I volunteered in so many clinics down in San Diego just so that the women and the children could have some kind of health care. But then we have to do our share. So if we vote for it, what are we going to do about it?
Yes.
You can't just say, okay, I've got a doctor's appointment, fix me.
Right.
Fix yourself first.
Right. We literally have to We have to ironically put our money where our mouth
is,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that means we have to choose better. I've heard people say, well, a whole food plant-based lifestyle is expensive.
Cheaper.
Cheaper, yeah. Not just the food-wise. I mean, I haven't bought meat in so many years.
Oh.
And I'm so grossed out when I go through the meat section. But this week, I'm going to make it my business. As gross as it is, I'm going to go look at meat prices. I just want to go see. I'm just curious. Steaks and that kind of stuff, I have no idea. But I can tell you, you know, when I spend money on red bell peppers and broccolini and cauliflower and lettuce and zucchinis and, oh my God, I buy absolutely the most expensive apples available. I just do. And
I just buy them all.
I don't even care.
Want so many apples. We've been eating so many apples and oranges and bananas lately.
They're so good.
Oh, they're amazing.
It's probably why you're glowing. You're glowing.
Oh, I am?
Yeah,
oh, that's
you
nice.
Are. Yeah, you're sparkling.
Oh, I like that.
Feels
I am
good,
a sparkly
huh?
girl
you
today.
You are, yeah.
I feel
I love
sparkly.
That. I think the thing that we have to do when we talk about putting our money where our mouth is and changing to a whole food plant-based lifestyle is we have to think about it in the moment.
Yep.
You know,
every bite.
Every bite.
Every choice. Every bite is a choice.
Yep.
So what choice are you going to make? And, you know, we dump on doctors and we say things about doctors. Oh, they just want to write a prescription or they didn't get enough education on nutrition. No, they're so overwhelmed and they're so busy. That if you like your physician, why don't you take your health into your own hands so that his job's not quite so hard?
Yeah. Yeah. The crazy thing about being in that moment. I know I kind of just jumped right back to where we were a moment ago, but
no, that's good. I rambled.
It was good. I mean, and I agree. We can make everybody's jobs on everybody can be easier. We can be easier on our families by not volunteering to get sick. Because when we eat shakes and burgers and cheese and fries and, you know, cheesecakes and all that stuff, that is literally, we're raising our hands and volunteering to get sick is what we're doing. I mean, the research, the medical science shows that up to 80, and some people say as much as 96%, I believe it's 96 or 97% of all illness could be prevented with a proper diet and lifestyle, but I'm going to just go ahead and be super conservative and say 80%.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right?
We can do it. And when you talk about the families, we've all been affected by sudden death.
Right.
You know, a family member that just had a sudden heart attack and just died.
Yes.
Talk about devastating. Or we've all had family or friends that have had prolonged cancer, prolonged illness. So when you think about your family, think about not putting them through that.
Right.
Think about nurturing them for as long as you can, being as healthy as you can. We all worry about finances as we age because, you know, dementia, that's a lifestyle.
That's a lifestyle component too.
I mean, we're learning that it's very much just all like related. A heart attack. It's just those vessels to your brain. The financial cost of that and who's going to end up paying for that? Your family is.
Mm-hmm.
One way or another. I mean, if you're lucky enough to have a savings and a retirement, then their whole inheritance is gone, right?
Because
you're going to be spending it trying to live
fix your body.
Best life you can, even with dementia. And then if you don't have a savings, are they having to put money into it every month, a couple of thousand, just to keep your care going so that you're safe?
Or do you become medically indigent and now you're part of the state's responsibility?
Nobody wants to be there.
Nobody wants to be there.
Nobody.
And you know, are you going to get the kind of care you might want to have at the end of your life? But more importantly, I like your approach that says, why put your family in that position to begin with?
Yeah.
You know, raise your hand for a different outcome. And that different outcome is, I want to be healthy.
And we know that you can prevent it, even if you're 60. Hello, I'm turning 60 in a couple months. You can change that clock. You can see results after 2 weeks.
Yes.
No matter who you are, what age you are.
You can see results immediately.
Consistency of a whole food plant-based diet. You're going to have less fatigue. You're going to have more energy. You're going to get off the couch more. You're not going to have stomach aches. You're not going to be constipated. I mean, so many things that you can see in 2 to 3 weeks. If you're a diabetic and you take your blood sugars daily,
you're going to see
your blood sugars go down.
Right.
If you're hypertensive and you're on hypertensive medicine, you're probably going to see that going down.
Yes.
So again, just as a disclaimer, make sure your doctor knows what you're doing because your medications will be changing.
Yeah, they will be.
And they need to support you.
Isn't that crazy? Your medications will be changing when you adopt a whole food plant-based lifestyle because your medications are only ameliorating or addressing symptoms of the standard American diet.
Right.
It's just so crazy
and
to me.
If you want to save money, wouldn't it be lovely not to spend so much money on your medications?
Yeah. Or how much time and energy you have to spend thinking
just
about what pill to take
and
when to take it,
oh
and did
gosh.
I take it and did I lose it and when is my prescription got to get refilled? And
my mother-in-law was on 29 different pills.
Oh.
And I kept saying, I don't even understand why she's on these.
Oh,
and I have
you're
a
medical professional,
I'm like, why is she on 29 medications? And let me tell you, I think it was a fun game for her because I'd put them all in those little Monday through breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I think she would go in after I did it and shake them up and go, oh, my pills are mixed up. And I'd have to come over.
Oh, gosh. And look at the numbers and sort them all out and reorganize.
I think she did it on purpose. I really do.
That's terrible.
I did say she was my mother-in-law, right?
Right. You did say she was your mother-in-law. You know, I always really rely on this one concept that different isn't always better, but better is always different. And in the concept of working on a bite-by-bite basis, on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis, as you just said, you know, you're going to start to feel different pretty quickly.
You are.
You might not feel immediately better. Like, you might not sit down and eat a red bell pepper and feel better. Although, I am going to say this. When I eat a red bell pepper or an orange, My mouth tingles.
Yeah.
Like as soon as I'm done with it, Gary and I will sit around and we're like, oh my God, is your mouth tingling? I'm like, yeah, is your mouth tingling? Yes.
It's a happy tingle.
It's a happy tingle. It's such a good feeling. Yep. It feels healthy. And this is another really weird thing to say. I brush my teeth a lot. I floss a lot. I'm pretty much a stickler about mouth care. I just always have been.
Yeah.
I don't ever have bad breath anymore, ever, since I
I don't either. I remember when I used to eat meat, you know how you did that checker where you put your hand over your mouth
right,
and you go,
check it. Right.
No, it's good. Or,
right. Or if you got a piece of floss in there and found a piece of, you know, carnitas came out of your teeth and it was bitter later, and gross. Right?
No.
But this whole fresh breath thing is amazing. I mean, I can literally wake up in the morning and give Gary a kiss on the lips without hesitation.
That's so sweet.
It is kind of sweet.
That's so sweet. After how many years you're waking up and giving him a kiss on the lips?
41. Whoa. This year is 41 years. It's pretty exciting.
That's pretty cool.
But I think the key to this whole concept is, you know, you might not feel different immediately, except your mouth might feel better. It might take you 10 days. It might take you only 3 days. Here's an interesting thing. If you are diabetic, for instance, or if you are dealing with blood sugars, you're going to see some pretty immediate things happen.
I told you about my friend that stayed for 3 days.
Yes.
And her blood sugars just kept dropping. But
3 days. Three days. So she comes to your house and she's going to be your guest.
It was actually 2 days of my food.
So in 2 days, she comes to your house and you're like, hey, welcome to my house. This is great. I'm glad you're here. We don't eat ham, bacon, sausage, burgers, chips,
fries.
Well,
I didn't say that. I just said breakfast is on the table.
Nice. But behind the scenes, the intention is, hey, you're going to eat whole food, plant-based, right?
Yep.
And you probably knew what her health condition was. So you were probably alert to that. And I'm guessing you said something to her. Hey, bro. You're going to be eating whole food plant-based. I'm curious to see what happens with your blood sugars. And what did happen with her blood sugars?
Oh, they just dropped. I mean, she cut out her metformin, which is the oral medication for diabetes, completely.
Wow.
Within 2 days. And then she was still taking her insulin and just kept dropping it.
Now, when you have diabetes, and I don't, so I don't know this.
She was a nurse.
She was a nurse.
So she's comfortable reducing her insulin.
That was my question. Yeah. I was going to ask you.
No, like, see the doctor.
But you have to monitor, right?
You
so like
do.
You're doing this blood sugar pricker sticky thing on your finger to test so you know how many units of injection to give yourself, right?
Exactly. And so they have a sliding scale.
They do. Okay.
They do. And most diabetics that are on insulin, they know what to do with their insulin if their sugar is too low or too high. So you can manage it that way, but you still have to keep in contact with your doctor. The other thing that we have to mention is if you go whole food plant-based diet, the only supplement, and that's what we should talk about someday, is supplements and vitamins.
Yeah,
what
I'd love to do that.
That is.
Let's do that next time.
Okay. First of all, if you do go whole food plant-based diet and you have any medical condition, make sure you're in contact with your doctor and you have an availability to your doctor to tell them what you're doing and just be aware of your medications. But then the only supplement that's really necessary is B12. You have to take a good source of B12. It's not a lot. I think it's 2.4 micrograms daily.
It's a tiny little amount.
I think I take 1,000 a week only because that's how I could find it. I couldn't find it in lower doses. But you need to take that. And elderly people, even if they eat meat, need to take that. And a lot of people that are on the SAD diet need to start addressing B12 because the feed that our animals are getting it from, because animals get it from dirt. It's in the microbes. It's not actually a vitamin. So the animals that are getting the sterile feed anymore are not, they're not range. So they're eating from a trough. So they're not getting B12. That's transferred to us. So it's a good thing next time you go for your annual, ask about your B12 and it's water soluble. So there's no study that shows that it's detrimental. Basically, you'll just pee it out.
So your goal is get your B12, get your D, know your numbers. The real goal is know your numbers. And you know, those numbers range everything from your blood numbers, right? Your A1C, which is a marker of your last 30, 60, 90 days,
something like that, 90 days
for your blood sugars. Know your hypertension numbers.
Right.
Know what your blood pressure is. Know your triglycerides, right? And you're saying
know your BMI.
Yeah, know your numbers. And then you can bring them down. Now, I really want to, because we've talked so much about obesity, I want to share really briefly a couple of things. in the Applied Nutrition course from Oregon State University talks about the causes of obesity. And I'm going to just run these down really quickly because it's interesting. It says there are many factors that may be contributing to the development of obesity in America today. The top of the list is genes. And I can't wait to share something about this.
I would like to argue with that, but okay.
Well, but the top of the, well, yeah, I want to argue with it too. So the top of the list is genes. Second is poor diets. Third is overeating. Fourth is physical inactivity, then diseases, then medications, then lack of sleep, then stress, and then psychological factors. Quitting smoking, early life influences, the built environment. Okay,
now,
those
are
all those things.
Are you sure that wasn't alphabetically? Because it's like no. It's not in the correct order I would place.
Well, it does. The sentence immediately after genes says the key word is may. Genes may have an influence, but this is considered very small.
Okay.
Okay, so this is what I want to do, though. I want to now switch over from that to Dr. Dean Ornish, MD, and Ann Ornish's book, Undo It, which is available in your library. And I want you to hear what Dr. Ornish says. Now, remember, Dr. Ornish, and then I want you to wrap up our show, Sherry. So I'm going to just make this really quick, and then you get to wrap us up and take us out today, okay?
Oh.
Okay. Dr. Dean Ornish, in his book, Undo It, says, our genes play a role in obesity, but they do not determine whether or not we gain weight by eating or not eating certain types of foods. For example, a 2018 study from Stanford set out to prove that some people are genetically able to metabolize carbohydrates better than fats or vice versa. Vice versa. There's no vice versa. It's vice versa. And that personalized diets based on these genes would result in greater weight loss. Okay, so let's hear that again. The study from Stanford set out to prove that some people are genetically able to metabolize carbohydrates better than fats or vice versa, and that personalized diets based on these genes would result in greater weight loss. The next sentence is two words. It didn't.
Yep.
The authors concluded neither genotype pattern, example, type or genes, nor baseline insulin secretion was associated with the dietary effects on weight loss. So it
It's not proven.
Genetic.
And think about it. Is it cultural? Is it familial? Meaning this is what we eat. We have ice cream every night watching TV at 8 o'clock and then go to bed and we have a half a gallon. We have all kinds of fat foods for breakfast. So is it familial or is it something that we do in our family or is it our genes? And I still go back to whether it's a cancer gene, whether it's an obesity gene, whether it's a hypertensive cholesterol gene. You do not have to be held hostage to your genetic matter because what turns it on and off, that's part of your body healing itself. So if you're healthy and you're doing a great job, you have less of a chance of getting these diseases.
The lifestyle is the trigger puller.
It is.
Right? So there's a loaded gun always in your body.
Everybody.
The loaded gun is your genetics, but there's no trigger until you pull the trigger. And we pull the trigger when we pull foods into our mouths and beverages into our mouths. So what we're putting into our bodies really, really matters. It pulls the trigger. Okay, woman, you're going to take us out. Wrap us up.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you for joining us. This has been a wonderful morning full of interesting conversation and topics. I am so happy that you're listening to KCIW, Curry County Community Radio, 100.7 FM in Brookings.
Nice.
And to thank them so much for supporting us and supporting this program. Eat well. Hang in there. It's easier than you think. Hugs to everybody.
Awesome. Well done. Woo! We'll see you again soon on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.